everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. I'm your host, Chris Cesarano, and joining me is, after a long time of absence, my favorite Canadian, Jerry.
Hello.
And my favorite real person friend that will do a podcast with me, Joey.
Yo!
So, this week we're going to be discussing Japanese game studios, kind of a thing. Like, basically, over the past several years, Japan's been in a bit of a flux, trying to figure out, I think, where they're all going as a games industry. And a lot of the big publishers have been struggling to deal with that global market. They can't just develop for their little island in the East. They have to develop for the world, kind of a thing, or at least that's the goal. And the thing that kind of sparked this from me, and it's something that I've discussed a lot of times, looking at Square Enix, for example, and how they, as a Japanese company, are faring. And despite a lot of the struggles they've been going through and some of the other things, like, they purchased Eidos, which was a weird decision to me at the time, because if you're going to purchase a Western studio, why is it going to be Eidos? And yet, ever since then, I mean, Deus Ex Human Revolution was already mostly in development, but then you have the new Tomb Raider, the new Hitman evidently reviewed very well. You had Thief, which, okay, they can't all be winners. And evidently they've been doing really well with Eidos. And now, even with the Japanese division, I played Final Fantasy XV, the demo recently, the day after we recorded the last podcast, in fact, and holy crap, I was floored by it. I was completely caught off guard, and I absolutely loved it. So I'm actually starting to think about, you know, how good of a spot Square Enix could be in this next generation versus a company like Capcom, who, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but for me, the big gaming companies that I'm used to, like the names that meant something when I was a kid, were Nintendo, Capcom, and Squaresoft, with a little bit of Konami.
Yeah, something like that. I played a lot of games with basically all those companies when I was a kid. I was a big fan of the original Castlevania games and stuff like Contra and all these other things that Konami did incredibly well. And it was very interesting. I was listening to, not this week's Giant Bombcast, but last week's, and they were talking about this little hubbub that happened recently with Hideo Kojima and Konami, and talking about how, you know, conspicuously absent, well, both Capcom and Konami, but to a bigger degree, Konami has been this generation, and how they actually pointed out that Konami is actually shipping only two console games this year, which is MGS5 and their yearly soccer game. That's literally it. And how it seems like they are potentially, it seems like these companies are walking back from the console business somewhat, because in Japan, a lot of these companies are very, very diversified. Like, Konami actually runs like a huge slot machine company, and they run, like, if you can believe it, like fitness clubs in Japan, like these things that have really very little to do, if anything, with video games. And it looks like they seem to be kind of refocusing on that, and they're kind of like, you know, maybe console games not worth it for us anymore. And Capcom seems to be all but strictly a mobile company these days.
Yeah, Pachinko is actually still a pretty big deal over there too, so
it is. Yeah, they do pachinko. Konami does pachinko machines, and they also do, they actually have like a big division in Vegas that does actual like slot machines, which is apparently a huge thing for them.
What about
they
you,
also do some tabletop gaming as well. Like, Konami owns the Yu-Gi-Oh franchise, so
that's right.
Yeah,
oh yeah, yeah, that'll do it. But how about you, Joe? Like, what kind of stuff? I mean, you grew up with a lot of the same stuff. Oh, you also had Sega. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, like the like you said, like the big three for you was what again? Nintendo,
Capcom,
and Square.
And Squaresoft, yeah.
Yeah, for me it was Sega and Nintendo, because I had them both, so like there was no war in my place. I just, if I felt like switching off, I would just go to the other. I don't necessarily have a third, but I would say that I grew up more with Capcom just because of Mega Man and Street Fighter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I will say, yeah, Capcom is definitely in a bind, because most of what I grew up with, specifically Mega Man, like, it's not... They haven't done anything... Nintendo has done more with Mega Man in the past couple years than Capcom has in forever.
Yep. And
that's it's looking grim.
It is. I mean, and, like, when you consider what Capcom has on their horizon, they just... And it's funny, because there was a news story... or rather a rumor, I don't know, people actually posted about some analysts are predicting that there's going to be a new Resident Evil this fall after Capcom has just experimented with Resident Evil Revelations 2 as a $30 episodic game, or $40 if you get it retail. And then they are claiming, at least, that if it weren't for Sony's involvement, they wouldn't even be able to afford making Street Fighter V. And they have two free-to-play games coming out with, what is it, Deep Down.
Deep Down's one of them.
It is Deep Down. And then Dragon's Dogma, they are making another one.
Oh, yeah, Dragon's Dogma Online, yes.
Yeah.
And thus far, it's only for Japan. So, yeah. And they're both free-to-play. So right now, I think Capcom is in trouble, and they're trying to figure out what the hell to even do, how to even survive.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think they're figuring out how to capitalize a bit more on the mobile side of things, specifically on the 3DS, because apparently, I don't own it yet, but Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate apparently did gangbusters. So
oh, God, I forgot about
it did really
that.
Well. Yeah.
I forgot so well. They do Monster Hunter.
Yeah, and I think that's something to capitalize on.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting, though, is, and this is something I know just because I actually follow sort of as a, with a hobbyist level of interest, the actual business side of the industry. And the thing that's funny is because I've heard a lot of podcasts and other things recently speculating about this and talking about how, oh, geez, are these companies in trouble? You know, are they going to survive? Here's the funny thing. All three of the big Japanese companies, that being Konami, Capcom, and Square, are actually all profitable. Right now, they're which is funny because the North American publishers are struggling to make money, but these guys, mostly because they're so diversified, they're actually all making money in spite of the fact that they all seem to be, well, less Square, but Capcom and Konami definitely seem to be kind of backing away from console gaming right now just because they have their hands in a lot of other pots and they're actually making money. I think Sega's even still profitable, even though they're going through their own weird transition right now. And that's the interesting part, is that these companies aren't struggling to survive, but they all seem to be reevaluating if the sort of bigger, larger scale gaming industry that they've traditionally been a part of is something they want to keep doing. And they seem to be kind of on the fence about it. And I think part of that's because I've been hearing for a while now that apparently, you know, there was a lot of speculation at the end of the last generation whether or not people kind of really cared about bigger console-style gaming experiences anymore. Apparently, that has been... there's some debate about how big an effect that had here now, but apparently in Japan, that contraction is a very real thing. Like, apparently, like, the PlayStation 4 is doing extremely well everywhere else, but it's actually not selling very well in Japan, because Japan, mostly because there's such a mobile population and because everybody lives in much smaller places in Japan, they've tended to embrace mobile to a much bigger degree than even the other parts of the world have. And it kind of looks like these companies, I'm wondering if they're either decided to get out of big gaming, or if, because of all the speculation about the market at the end of the last generation, all decided to wait and see what would happen. And maybe now that those consoles are selling, they have a bunch of stuff that's greenlit, but, you know, it takes 3 to 5 years to make a AAA game, so they won't be able to talk about them for a while.
Well, there's...
Makes me wonder.
There's a couple other things going on with Japan that people aren't aware of. I mean, there are two things happening with Japan right now that are actually kind of screwed up for the country. Is one, young people aren't getting married and having sex. They're not having sex. They're not going to have kids. They're very career focused. And two, because the economy is such crap, nobody's buying anything, which is why everything is so otaku focused right now. Why, you know, people complain about the anime and it's, you know,
Everybody's focused on you know, the collector's side of things. Like, they're catering towards the collectors, because those are the ones that will go out and throw their money away.
They're the only ones buying things, and that's the thing. What does the PlayStation 4 have? What does the Xbox One have? What does even the Wii U have that the otaku are going to want to buy and play in Japan. And right now, not
a
lot.
The Wii U has Nintendo stuff that people love, but most of what's come out on the PS4 and Xbox One is stuff made for Western audiences. And the Japanese typically, like, I've heard for years, you know, the Japanese audience isn't big into first-person shooters, for example. So a lot of the stuff that's coming out on these new machines isn't necessarily catering to them either. So they're kind of, I'm sure a lot of them are kind of like, well, you know, I don't really care about this because there's nothing on it I want.
But you know what the funny thing is? Because when my brother was teaching over in Korea, he was teaching middle school kids. And what he found, like, everyone knows about, like, the whole StarCraft thing. But in Korea, they freaking love first-person shooters. In Korea, they love the Western-style games. It's it's almost the opposite of what's going on in Japan. So that's the thing. Like, for
when the Korean market's on fire, like, it's doing really well, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's very interesting.
When it comes to, like, competition, I think Korea knows where it's at in the gaming side of things. Like, I feel like it all started with StarCraft, and then once gaming, you know, had a much bigger presence online, they just jumped right on it, and it just never went away.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I think Japan in many ways is going through kind of a – I think the Japanese gaming industry is in many ways trying to either to reinvent itself or is already sort of well into that, and we just sort of started noticing on this side recently. And I think that might be what it is, because a lot of these companies still make – you know, despite the fact that the Japanese gaming audience is a very small part of the market, and relatively speaking, and because its tastes are shifting, even though there is a big Western audience out there, a lot of these companies still tend to make stuff for their home territory first. Like, there's still a lot of games that come from the Capcoms and the Konamis and the Squares that you never see outside of Japan.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, that's still a big thing for them. And because that market is kind of in flux, I think they're kind of – that's like I said, I think they're all – I think they're all in kind of a holding pattern to see, well, what they should do. And I think – because what Square did when they bought Eidos was they bought a Western publisher, and they let the Western – the people who were running it continue to run it, who already understood and were selling stuff to the Western audience. So I think that's why they sort of made that transition much better. Whereas a lot of Japanese companies tend to be, a lot of companies that are run from Japan tend to, even if they have divisions that are designed to cater to the West, everything sort of goes through the home office first. And I wonder if some of these other companies like Capcom and Konami, which traditionally catered to Japan first and the West second, just kind of don't know what to do right now, and they're trying to figure it out.
I'm going to have to only partially disagree, but only to remind remember when we were discussing Murdered Soul Suspect, that game came about because it was, for the most part, sort of a Japanese story, but still worked with by an American studio, and the two had to work together to get that game out. But at the same time, I mean, you and I, we both thought that's part of what made the game what it was, as good as it was.
Yeah.
But
it didn't hit with people in general, though.
At the same time, you could be right. I don't know what the story was that for when Capcom hired Grin to make the Bionic Commando remake. And even though I technically think it was a fun game, I did enjoy it, that story was not
amazing.
Well thought out. But it's like, at the same time, you can also see, like, a Japanese studio being like, what do Americans want? Well, what do they see, and how are they going to translate that? I mean, it's kind of like, every time they have to draw, like, an American female character in an anime, especially these days, they're all, like, the female American is always drawn, like, Tina from Sick and Dead or Alive. You know, cowboy hat, blonde, American flag on a bikini top kind of a thing.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Blonde hair, blue eyes, yeah. I mean, it's, they have their own ideas of what America is, just like we have our own false ideas of what Japan and China and all that stuff is. And I don't remember where I was going with that.
Well, I think it's I think your point is that maybe you have what we were talking about, sort of one group of people trying to understand what the other wants and maybe having trouble figuring
Bionic
it out.
Bionic Commando, yeah. And that's the thing. What do you have? This angry-looking guy with the dreads and everything and a terribly tragic past, but...
Yeah. It turned out that's, dark, gritty.
Exactly. That's not what people wanted out of Bionic Commando. So when the Xbox Live Arcade version comes out, which is a silly, self-aware remake of the original game...
Dude, he had a like aviator sunglasses on and a mustache.
Fantastic!
Like, yeah. I need to buy that. I have an Xbox Live card. I'm going to use it like right after this podcast.
That's a good, yeah, so good. But you know what's interesting too is that we've talked about all these challenges that they're having, and yet in certain ways there are certain people that have managed to find a. What you would call a niche, but it's not even a niche anymore because it's been hyper successful. You have examples like From Software with, you know, the various Souls games and Bloodborne now. You know, those are very Japanese games in terms of their design sensibilities and the way they approach things. And they're games that are very not what most game executives would call mainstream at all, and yet they have been incredibly successful, and they adhere to a lot of Japanese game design traditions very proudly, and I think that's one of the reasons they've done so well.
But at the same time, I would say that there's a couple things that are helping the Souls series and now Bloodborne is they have a very Western aesthetic to them. They don't look like... obviously Japanese games.
No.
Like, if you look at, the new SMT Cross Fire Emblem trailer, that is clearly a Japanese game.
It is very Japanese.
Yeah.
But you look at Dark Souls, Demon Souls, Bloodborne, they all have a very Western culture aesthetic, so it's easier for a Western audience to pick up and play and adapt to. And
there's
the
very little
time,
story to them. I mean, they have a story, but it's almost impenetrable. But it's not anime or anything that many people would associate with, like JRPGs, for example, or anything like that. Some people are very invested in the Dark Souls lore, but most people don't play those games for that.
But it's not even just that. I mean, think about the press and the hype and then the Let's Play element that lent that game its success. Because at the same time, Dragon's Dogma itself, again, you know, Japanese game, but has a Western art aesthetic. But when the press got hold of it, a lot of them complained about stuff like a lack of fast travel, and even the lack of proper saves. Which is funny because, you know, you're talking about people that love Dark Souls and everything, and yet you die in Dragon's Dogma, and everyone's like, "Man, it didn't do a checkpoint for me," but Dragon's Dogma did not have as positive a buzz in the press, and even though a lot of the people that played it loved it, it never generated the same hype train. You didn't get the streaming culture with it because when you watch people play it, you were watching people play a game. There was nothing special about it. No surprise, you know, kick from a skeleton knocking you off the cliff that you never saw.
I will contest that. And I'm going to weigh that against my own experience because there was one time a giant griffin came out of nowhere and slapped my entire team around. That is garbage, sir.
No, okay, I mean, I kind of agree with you. My favorite death in Dragon's Dogma was I was on top of a fortress wall. I got hit by a freaking ballista bolt. Like, this giant spear hit my character, sent them spiraling over the edge, and the hit with the ground is what killed the character. I remember just watching that death and being like, that was glorious. But how often does that happen compared to Dark Souls? Like, it's not the kind of thing that happens all the time. And again, not as many people were streaming it. It just did not get to develop that culture and that hype. So even if Dragon's Dogma is a good game, you didn't get that happening. Which, if it had four-player co-op, you might have been able to, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree.
That's actually one of the things that I think is a big shame, because now Dragon's Dogma Online is being made. They only have plans for Japan at the moment, and if they don't choose to go with a Western audience, I think they're really missing out, because it's a co-op game. And in Japan, you have a very small audience of potential players. And while I understand if you expand further than that, you now have a lot of money to invest in servers, making sure you can actually have enough people play without the servers crashing. But you expand that to the West, and you get, like, let's go in order, you know, South Korea, then you get Asia, you get Europe, and then you get, you know, North America and everything. You know, three big markets that, yeah, you might have a lot of people hop on at first, play for free, and then forget about it, but the odds of getting people that are going to buy stuff, that are going to pay for microtransactions, that are going to keep playing, I feel like the odds are, if you're going to make a free-to-play game, you want as many potential players as possible.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you throw in microtransactions. It will keep people playing, and it will also, kill the whole grind aspect of it. Because they could also do that. They could make it take a lot longer to level up and force you to buy into microtransactions.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though. Deep Down was planned to release in America, right? I mean, as far as I'm aware, that got delayed. I'm not sure. But Deep Down, I mean,
I don't think there's a date on it yet, but it's still coming.
But that game's going to be an unknown, and they're willing to try and do that worldwide. Whereas Dragon's Dogma, you have a following. You have people that were willing to buy Dark Arisen, which is essentially the first game plus, you know. They're kind of willing to buy the game again, so that they could have more of Dragon's Dogma. You have an audience, you have a market established, and they're not doing the sure thing? That's kind of what gets me really confused about that move. So, I don't know. I mean, going back, though, to what you were saying, I mean, with From Software, they made a game that firstly had Western aesthetic, therefore was more accessible to a Western audience, but at the same time, maybe it got lucky, or maybe it was just because there was nothing like it.
I think that was it, because the interesting thing was, right, the original Demon's Souls, so the first game in that sort of thing that they did, actually originally did come out only in Japan. Actually, Sony published it, and they didn't want to put it out over here because they thought the Western audience wouldn't be interested in that game. It wasn't until Atlus actually picked it up and put it out here that they went, people are actually interested in this, and that's what kind of kicked it off. But it's a game, it's a phenomenon in the Western world at one point almost didn't happen. It took one of the little publishers to make it happen.
And speaking of Japanese developers that are making their way, Atlus, they've always been there, man. They've always been there. But the interesting thing about Atlus is they basically, they never put out a lot of, like, they never counted on anything being a hit. They put out one print run of a game, limited copies, and then that's it.
Yeah. So the thing with Atlus is they always stayed small.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the funny thing is that's actually allowed them to remain a success. And that's kind of what you're having with other publishers working in the States. Like, you have XSEED is doing that kind of a thing. I believe XSEED is what put out what you're currently playing, Joey, Akiba's Trip.
Oh my God, dude. That game is something special.
That's the thing, man, I tell you.
It looks it. But, I mean, that's the thing. Like, XSEED is putting out, like, these random little things. They're picking up these little things. And I believe XSEED, they were the ones that put out Pandora's Tower, because I believe Nintendo brought over the Last Story.
Yeah, I believe it was. That was XSEED, yeah. And you've got them, and you've got Axis, which is a company. They put out, like, the Blaze Blue series over here. Seems to be a lot of the focus now, is you've got all these small companies now that are putting out all of these titles. And the interesting thing is these are all niche titles. They have very limited appeal, and they know that. And they budget them and they print them for retail accordingly so that they can make a profit on games that aren't going to sell millions of copies. Like, they're structuring for a smaller console audience, which is just something you don't tend to hear about very often. But they all seem to be doing well at it.
Well, and there's also the fact that, actually, like, the Nintendo Direct, Atlus just Atlus and Nintendo announced that they're bringing over the Attack on Titan game, but it's digital only. You're only going to be able to download it onto your 3DS in America.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, they're localizing it, and they're only making it available, which is actually a really intelligent move, because it's a niche game. It doesn't look like a game a lot of people are going to be willing to spend money on, so you put it out there digitally. You don't have to worry about printing manuals. You don't have to worry about boxes. You don't have to worry about shipping. It's actually the perfect distribution platform for a niche game that is going to have a market, because people that really like Attack on Titan, even if the game is crap, are going to be willing to drop the money on it.
Yeah, that series has tons and tons and tons of fans. It's getting extremely popular. Now, I was actually going to... You just totally answered my question. I was going to ask why you think they were doing digital only, but a good point you brought up was... what's it called? The lack of instruction manuals. Because I just bought... Like, I have 5 physical copies for the PS4, and only only one of them has an instruction manual. The others are empty, or they have, like, a sleeve in it that just has the game's logo in it. Ocubus Trip is the only game that I have for the PS4 that has a manual in it.
That was released in physical copy?
Yeah, I have it, dude. It's on my table right now.
Yeah, it totally was. XSEED actually puts out all their stuff physically.
Now, quick question. Oh, wow. Did XSEED also make Conception 2?
If
you guys even know what that is?
I know what it is.
I've heard of it, yes.
I played the demo. I did.
Yes, they did.
Okay, that would
have... They put that out. Yeah, it was developed by Marvelous, who owns XSEED. So yeah, they put that out.
Marvelous is also one of my favorite, like, I guess they're publishers. But yeah, lots of stuff they put out is great.
They put out a bunch of the Suda51 stuff, right? Like, yep. No More Heroes, yeah.
No More Heroes. What was it? Did they do
Killer
Odin
is Sphere? Dead? Was Killer is Dead was done by XSEED as well? That was a Suda. Suda didn't direct that, but he was involved in it in some way.
Yeah, it has the No More Heroes aesthetic to it.
Yeah,
it does have a very No More Heroes style, but not quite as out there.
Yeah, and once I heard about that made me sad, but I'm pretty sure it's cheap now. I'll still pick it up because I love that man.
You know what? You know who I'm surprised is honestly still able to... Like, I don't actually know how in some ways. I guess they're doing pretty well because Platinum, they used to be Clover, and now...
Yeah.
And Capcom shuttered Clover because they weren't doing that well. Now Platinum is able to make these games that...
They're a weird enigma because... They put out a bunch of games that everybody loved and nobody bought.
Yeah.
Like, they put out... oh, my God, my brain is failing me. Vanquish is one example that was a good game that didn't sell very well. They put out...
Mad World was another one on the Wii,
Mad World
which
didn't
actually
sell.
Not too bad.
Yeah, I didn't mind Mad World. I thought it was cool. But, yeah, that didn't sell. Bayonetta 1 did okay, but not enough to warrant a sequel until Nintendo paid for it. Bayonetta 2 probably didn't sell very well because there's not enough Wii U's in the world.
I don't know.
Damn,
I don't
shame.
Bayonetta 2 might have actually done well.
I
hope
Bayonetta
so.
2
I
did
really
all right.
Hope so.
Yeah, Bayonetta
2 Wonderful 101
really well.
Apparently didn't sell very well at the time either. Like, they make all these really, really good games that don't sell very well, but they keep on trucking.
But you know what? I'm going to say one thing about Nintendo is they at least do try and support this stuff, because every once in a while in the Club Nintendo, which, you know, rest in peace now, that's gone.
I know.
But every once in a while Nintendo will try and basically be like, by the way, you can get Wonderful 101. So they're trying to get people to play it somehow. They're not just letting it kind of be like, oh, well, that's it. Which is kind of surprising because they don't really mention Lego City Undercover much, but that game's also, like, not dropping in price. So.
Wait, what?
Lego City Undercover. You got to play it, right? Or know of it?
I never played it, but I heard it was... It looked like a lot of fun.
It's supposed to be the best Lego game, basically. And I keep thinking, oh, maybe I'll get it. And then, oh, it's still like $50.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Like, well, actual Nintendo games have price dropped before that one has.
That's really weird.
Yeah. So I guess it's still selling a lot. I guess everyone that gets a Wii U is like, oh, look, a Lego game.
I'll just buy this for my kid, and it'll keep him happy for a bit, I guess.
Yeah. So, but that's straying a bit off topic. Because a bit of what I wanted to discuss was actually there's Nintendo. Like, people were also talking about the whole cell phone thing, which I think some of what people are always forgetting when they discuss it is, as you mentioned, Jerry, like in Japan, like the phone is a big gaming platform. Like, people are still using flip phones over there, and they are still gaming on those flip phones, as well as the smartphones and everything else. And
mobile gaming in Japan was a thing long before anyone knew what it was over here.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's been a huge deal there for a long time. And, yeah, it's become the dominant way kind of everybody, including people who would identify as, like, hardcore gamers, are playing stuff there now.
And the funny thing about Nintendo that I don't think people realize is, and one of them I didn't even realize, is in a lot of ways they're trying to appeal to Japanese gamers more.
That makes perfect sense, actually.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Metroid Other M, the whole thing with that was people in Japan aren't playing Metroid games. They're bigger in America than they are in Japan. And so Metroid Other M, where they team up with a studio like Team Ninja, they're trying to clearly appeal to a Japanese crowd with that. Unfortunately, I think it ended up being a global mistake. But then, something that I wasn't aware of until I was informed of it recently, Zelda's even bigger in America than it is in Japan. So Hyrule Warriors is an effort to appeal to both American and Japanese markets in different ways. You're trying to get Japanese gamers interested in Zelda, and you're trying to get American and European gamers and stuff into Musou games, the Warriors games. So Nintendo's actually doing a really interesting job of trying, and I think the mobile move is actually more to keep Nintendo's name relevant in Japan than it is in America. But when people keep talking about what kind of games they expect to see, Nintendo's just talking about a collaboration for a game called Puzzles and Dragons. You know, they have a Super Mario version of it. I guarantee you games like that are going to be what you're going to see on cell phones. People keep thinking, you know, oh, what old games might they bring back, or what kind of games would I love to see them do? And it's like, they're probably going to do mashups like that.
If not that, apparently they're, because, you know, they announced another free-to-play Pokemon game, and that's definitely something that they're trying to push, probably for the Japanese market, rather than, because, like, Pokemon is something that is very kid-friendly, but in my mind, I'm always like, well, kids really aren't going to be able to do any microtransactions or anything like that, but I could see people in Japan, since they're always on the go, they just play something really quickly. I could see that working much more over there than here. It just makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, you think about it, you're suddenly having all these little spin-off titles in Japan. Like, you're having, like, the spin-off Pokemon, a spin-off Mario, and people that might have never played a Nintendo game in Japan might suddenly be getting introduced to these franchises. Like, maybe they have some kind of a small Fire Emblem spinoff or whatever, and now people are like, who are these characters? And they go, and, oh, look, the 3DS happens to have a brand new Fire Emblem game out there. I mean,
yeah, it's like a little bit of advertising that they could make money off of. In fact, I could see a free-to-play Fire Emblem working really, really well, now that I think about it.
I'm not sure I could, but... And that's the thing, too. Like, again, like, let's talk about, you know, trying to gather interest in Japan, because I actually have no idea what the popularity of Fire Emblem is in Japan. But it's starting to get bigger in America. That's the funny thing. It was one of those franchises that wasn't even in America for the longest time. They suddenly start releasing items on the GameCube and the Game Boy Advance, and suddenly it gets bigger and bigger until Fire Emblem Awakening is one of the biggest games on the 3DS.
Yeah, so that was insane.
Yeah, so now with part of the Nintendo Direct, I think, honestly, they're hyping up the new Fire Emblem more than they even did Awakening. And they have the new crossover coming out as well, which, I'm going to be honest, too. When I, firstly, I was just trying to figure out what the hell was going on in the trailer when they first announced it. Never would have guessed that was the Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei crossover.
I knew it was when I saw some of the costumes and how they had kind of a like a fantastical slash medieval kind of thing going on.
They did.
But then, you know, I honestly thought it was... Oh, my bad.
Sorry. No. I was just going to say, I honestly thought it was some kind of weird Japanese pop idol battle royale thing. So I'm just saying, like, I have no idea what this is. It's a thing.
That's kind of how I define some Atlus games.
Yeah.
Like, I would look at their trailers and I'd be like, what is this? I don't know what it is. I don't know what this is, but I kind of really, really want it, and I can't explain why.
But at the same time, I'm going to be honest, too. When I watched that trailer and when it was done, I basically thought, okay, Nintendo must have just walked up to Atlus and been like, fuck it. Nobody in America is buying it anyway. Otaku that shit up. Just otaku everywhere.
Let her rip, see what happens.
Yeah. Because
that's everything I saw on there was like, well, this is going to sell a lot of stuff in Akihabara, but it looks interesting, but it's definitely going to appeal more to a Japanese market than the American, which is what stuns me, that's actually the Wii U game. That's not on the 3DS, that's the Wii U.
Yeah.
That's expensive, so that's actually kind of a real surprise to me. But maybe that's part of what they're trying to do, is get Japanese gamers to purchase a Wii U to play that. Whereas in America, people will buy it, but I mean, it's like, in America, you're not going to get anyone excited for Fire Emblem crossing over with Shin Megami Tensei unless they already know what those things are.
Yeah.
In which case, they're already ready to be like, yep, that's some Japanese shit right there. So, that's, I don't know, that's just my impression of all that, but it looks interesting, but I still need to wait and see what it really is going to play like.
I will say that I think Wii U owners are probably, I think a decent amount of them are going to pick it up just because, you know, being a Wii U owner, I'm kind of like clamoring for new Nintendo games because that's what I bought the system for, specifically for Nintendo games. And I'm not going to lie, there's a lot to look forward to, but when you get something kind of new and off the wall like that, you're like, oh, wow, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to get it regardless because I mean, this system, I want to expand its collection, and I also want to have a lot of fun. It's, I think Wii U owners are in a special situation just because they really want games for that system. There isn't too much out there compared to the others.
Only if you're comparing to 360 and PS3?
Well, yeah. Yeah, if you're comparing to those.
And I'm not even thinking of exclusives. Like, I'm thinking in general. Like, when I go walk up to the PlayStation 4, I mean, I'm very much looking at games that I've in some way already played before. I mean, the biggest reason I was actually kind of excited to get Battlefield Hardline was just because I haven't played a modern military first-person shooter in years. So it was going to be fresh, and when I finally played it, that it actually has a bit of a self-focus makes it feel fresh to me. But at the same time, when I think of games that I would like to go back and replay already, like if I'm going to be looking at different games, like there is nothing like the Wonderful 101 out there for me. I mean, it's an action game, but it's a very different action game in both atmosphere, gameplay, its design. Like I don't know, like to me, like the Wii U's got stuff that you know you're going to go back and play. Like,
oh yeah,
Super Smash mm-hmm. Brothers. I'm going to play that a bunch already. Where like people are looking to gear up with, and I have no interest in Battlefield Hardline's multiplayer either. But Splatoon, I will get online and play people on Splatoon, and I know a lot of people are talking about how Nintendo doesn't have the voice chat. In some ways, I can agree, but at the same time, it's like, you know what? I play Mario Kart without voice chat, and I could deal with it. I'm fine without it. I'm fine with them limiting my most negative response to not fair.
And you know what? I I will say that the maps in Splatoon, they look like a reasonable size, so you don't have to, you know, try and call, like, you know, picks to your team members and say, hey, you guys need to go here because, you know, I'm all the way over here doing something. The maps seem like a reasonable size, so you don't actually need voice chat. All you got to do is just look around. Like,
yeah.
I think they were very... It looks so far like they were very intelligent in how they were designing the multiplayer of Splatoon.
Yeah. No, to be fair to the people that do listen to the podcast, this should not be the Nintendo love fest as much as I would love it to be. But there is another thing I will say, though, when it comes to Splatoon, is like, at the same time, Fire Emblem is the most Japanese game they really have going for them because it is distinctly anime art style. Everything else, well, I guess Pokemon as well. But when you get right down to it, when you look at a lot of Nintendo's games, the one interesting thing, and maybe this is actually part of what hurts them in Japan, is that a lot of their games don't look distinctly Japanese. Splatoon still looks so much like a game. Like, I'm expecting it to say Nickelodeon on the trailer at some point.
Yeah.
It looks like such a Nickelodeon-style property. Versus, you know, Mario himself and his universe doesn't look... Star Fox doesn't have a very Japanese look to it, partially because they're all anthropomorphized animals. But it's... Nintendo has a lot of games that don't look strictly Japanese, and I think that helps them appeal to a global market better. But at the same time, it could actually hurt, especially right now, considering how Japan is kind of... All these studios are forced to cater to an otaku market. And now, what do you do now? Because, like, a lot of the Capcom games you played, I mean, Street Fighter, when we were playing that as kids, did Street Fighter really scream, like, this is a Japanese game? Or were we just like, man, this game's awesome? And the same goes with, like, Mega Man X and everything. Like, the Mega Man games, like, they were games. Breath of Fire, I played that by Capcom. And Konami, the biggest reason I really know Konami is they did the earlier Turtle game, Ninja Turtle games.
And oh, then, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yep. The arcade games.
Yep. Yeah, they did Ninja Turtles, they did the Simpsons arcade game. They did quite a few of them, the arcade beat-em-ups.
Yep. Yep, and that's more than Contra or any other, or Castlevania or any other property they had that I didn't really play much of. Every time I booted up Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, that logo was there.
That was a good game.
That was the reason I knew Konami, and then on the PlayStation, Metal Gear Solid was the reason I knew them. And, yeah, as we were discussing before recording the show, you know, now Konami releasing barely anything, you know, just a soccer game and a Metal Gear Solid game, and now... Kojima's gone. And what does that mean for the new Silent Hill game? Like, no one knows. Everyone's freaking out.
Yeah, they've kept very, very quiet about it. But I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, it's under Kojima. You never know what that dude is going to bring up. I wouldn't be surprised if its development is mostly done by this point. I don't even know
how it's supposed to play. I mean, you played the demo for PT, but... Is that how the game's supposed to play by the end?
It says that the demo isn't going to accurately reflect what the final product could be. And I wouldn't be surprised if Silent Hills plays nothing like it. But yeah, like, again, it was just a playable teaser. It's just to give you a taste of what could be, not exactly what it will be.
But at the same time, and I will be honest, I mean, we know Kojima's name is attached. Joey, from your description, it sounded like basically he has a sort of Miyamoto role where he'll come in once in a while, look at things, and then give a few bits of direction. But even then, Guillermo del Toro's name is also attached to it. And, well, he's making a movie right now, or at least it's in post-production. So what the hell is he doing on the game?
I'm guessing if he was doing anything, it would be art design. Just because that dude has some...
I think he's involved in that and, like, probably story design and stuff like that. Because he was originally doing a different horror game for THQ that got canned when they went under, and then he kind of moved over into this thing. Interesting. So, and he was involved, the THQ game, he was heavily involved in, like, yeah, the fiction of it and a lot of the writing in that. I think, I don't remember if I heard this, it could just be in my head, but I'm pretty sure that's how he's involved in this one as well. He's sort of helping, you know, create the story design and narrative in that, but he's doing that. It's one of those roles that he can do while he works on other stuff too, you know?
Quick question. Are you guys hearing background noise from me?
No.
Nope.
Cool. All right. So for all we know, Konami might have Silent Hills coming as well, but that's the thing. Like, do we have another Castlevania? They just made Lords of Shadow 2, and they made a 3DS game, but the 3DS game was not really a Castlevania game. Like,
apparently nobody cared about, apparently Lords of Shadow 2 didn't sell either. Apparently it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I heard that the gameplay of that was really
Well, the first one didn't, the first one got some bad press for the most part because it was basically called a God of War clone. And then the second one got bad press ahead of time because in the beginning you play a guy that goes into a house and or at least you're seeing a cinematic of him going into a house, grabbing a woman, and, like, feeding off of her, which...
He's Dracula! Of course!
Considering the current climate, yeah, I can understand that it became a big hubbub. Whether it should have or not, I don't know.
Oh, whatever. But Dracula has, like, vampires have been known to do that for a long time. Bleh. it's a load of garbage. That's just people kicking up a stink. I'm not even gonna go into it.
The perpetually offended. But no, and that's the thing. Like, that had the it had that bad press going for it, and then the 3DS game. Like, a lot of people wanted to wait and see because they weren't sure if it was going to be as good as the previous ones, and evidently no one bought it because it didn't really play like a Castlevania game. It was much more action-oriented because the poor developers, because the developers were like, we want it to be like Castlevania. We want it to feel like the new game, like the new console game as well. And that gives them a rough spot because if someone's going to be playing a Castlevania game on the 3DS, they're going to want it to be a sequel to Circles of the Moon, Order of Ecclesiasta, or whatever all those titles were, because those were Castlevania getting a new life, really.
I will say, as someone who actually bought Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate, that the guy even at GameStop told me not to get it because he said it was bad. I'm like, dude, I'm getting it, okay? Because I loved the first Lords of Shadow. It was decent. I think the main issue with it was that once you finished it, there was nothing to do. It was over. I think they had a good, groundwork for something that if it had a sequel and they could build upon it, it could have been something amazing. But I guess because it wasn't well received, Capcom was like, yeah, let's not even bother. Let's just worry about the actual sequel.
You mean Konami?
Yeah, Konami. Did I say Capcom? I said Capcom.
You did say Capcom. But oops. You know what? Right now, though, I mean, of all, because I was never in love with anything from Konami, and they also, like, remember, several years ago, they teased a new Contra game. Never said anything about it again.
Wait, when did this happen?
It was, I think, their first E3 press conference done through live stream.
Oh, that how long disaster. That was 20...
I remember that.
That live... No, the live stream was not a disaster. The live stream was actually probably the best move they could have done. That might have been like 20. That had to be before.
Okay, yeah, I'm thinking of a different thing, but yeah.
I was still living in Jersey at that point. That was like, what, maybe 2011?
Yeah, maybe.
But it was a while ago because it was at least 2 years before Nintendo started doing their direct. And at the very end of that video, you know, because they announced a bunch of things, including, I think that was the year they announced the Zone of the Enders HD. Kojima teased the Fox Engine, but he tried to make it seem like he wasn't making a new Metal Gear Solid, probably because at the time he really didn't want to. And at the very end, they teased it with a flaming sea. And it was like, oh my god, there's going to be a new Contra. And
oh, I remember that.
Anything about it again. Never brought it up again.
And that's a shame, because the closest thing we got to Contra was also by Konami, Hardcore Uprising. That game was amazing.
Yeah, that was really
cool.
Was that
PS2? Cool. Was that PS2?
No, that was 360, and that was 360, and PS3 was a downloadable game.
Ah,
dude, it's kick ass. If you haven't played it, dude, next time you're over, I'm going to fire that thing up. It's amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. What year did that release? When was that?
That was like 2010.
20, yeah, or yeah, something like that.
2010.
It was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Maybe I'll have to check my timelines, because for all I know, that was the game they were teasing.
Nah, I doubt it, because it other than the fact that the name itself is a reference to an older Contra game, it's not Contra Hardcore Uprising. It's just Hardcore Uprising, and it plays like Contra. It even has like the same guns and everything. It just has a very anime aesthetic and a kick-ass soundtrack, dude.
Yeah, it was actually done by Ark, the Blaze Blue people.
Yeah, that's
made
right.
That game. Yeah.
Okay,
dude, it's all so right, good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But
it's pretty cool.
Right, I mean, there's a thing, like, who knows where Konami's going? I'm going to be honest. Like, I you know what I want to see? I want to see Nintendo buy Capcom.
That'd be interesting. They could afford it. That would be a hell of a thing.
Well, everyone knows that Nintendo's got their treasure chest, so to speak, to fall back on, and it can last them a long time, but if they bought Capcom, it probably wouldn't last them very much longer.
Yeah.
But at the current rate, I mean, I'm actually wondering if Capcom will exist, or if they'll go the way of THQ, because I'm fond of Capcom. They had a lot of properties that I really liked. They've got... Actually, you're right. You're right, Jerry. They are also starting to double down on the mobile, because they have a new Breath of Fire game finally coming out.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is I don't think any of these companies will go away, because they're all still doing well financially. It's just a question of whether or not they're going to continue to do much or anything at all in the sort of traditional gaming markets they're known for, or if they're just going to pivot into something else. Because that's the thing a lot of Japanese companies do, is they do tend to Japanese companies, a lot of them tend to be a lot more diversified, and do tend to, you know, when they see a business isn't working, even if they've been in it for a long time, they'll move to something else and kind of refocus themselves. And I'm wondering if that's what these guys are doing, which is kind of a bummer, because they have a lot of really cool, you know, really cool properties and franchises that I love to see new stuff in. But yeah, maybe they're just kind of in the position where, yeah, they're where a lot of other American companies would have languished and failed, as many of them have in recent years. These guys just kind of saw the writing on the wall and went, all right, we're going to go do something else. Which, from the point of view of someone who consumes their games, is really no better a situation, I suppose. It just means that they keep existing, and maybe they'll come back someday.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's actually what I'm kind of hoping. I'm hoping that, you know, the money that they do make with mobile games and, you know, anything with microtransactions and whatnot, that they use that funding to make something really, really big. If not, you know, release stuff too often, then release something that's definitely going to be of quality. And I don't know, maybe I think mobile is the best way they can experiment as well, just to see how well something gets received. Maybe they could generate hype for an upcoming title or project by creating a free-to-play mobile thing or teaser or whatever. Like, take PT, make it mobile. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Nah, actually, I think that's the thing. I think PT was the best marketing they could have had, because there was an air of mystery about it. It was scary, and it was even, like, I that was probably one of the only things I ever watched a video of people playing it. And even though in some ways I think the commentators were kind of annoying, just watching the game being played was enough for me to be like, nope. Yeah. That's scary as hell.
Oh, dude, it's scary. Just watching people play it can generate, like, even the most physical of responses. It's absolutely
Dark Souls
insane.
Effect, man. It's a Dark Souls effect, where some games, you get people watching a Let's Play, and they're going to be interested.
Yeah.
They're going to look at that and be like, dang, I gotta get me to play that, because that's going to be amazing. And there you go. I mean, now Silent Hills is set to be probably the best-selling Silent Hill game in years. I mean, it's got that whole marketing to it, basically. It's got buzz now. It's got people interested.
By the way, how did PT take off in its popularity? Because
a lot of people talked about it at the time. I think it got a lot of downloads. I mean, I hate horror games, and I tried it.
Was it tied to E3? Was it an E3? Because it was at the end of some presentation.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't E3
or Tokyo.
Yeah, it wasn't E3, but it was around some kind of event where, yeah, they just kind of went, oh, by the way, this is on PSN now, and everyone sort of rushed to grab it.
I don't think it was Tokyo Game Show, though, because Tokyo Game Show is very much more, it's a much less global show.
Then it must have been like GDC. Or something like that.
No. See, I feel like it was later. Maybe
it might have been Gamescom.
Because it was definitely after E3. It was definitely later in the year than E3, but it was not Tokyo Game Show. But it was at the end of some kind of a presentation. And yeah, they were like, oh, by the way, we have a demo for a game called PT up now. Go ahead and download it. People went, they downloaded it, and next thing you know, videos are going everywhere. People are theorizing. And then like a day later, screenshots of Norman Reedus's face, and it's like new Silent Hill game with Norman Reedus, Hideo Kojima, and Guillermo del Toro, and people just creamed themselves.
Dude, I had my dad play PT this past weekend, and yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I told him that Norman Reedus was in it, but that's exactly what happened when Norman Reedus turned around and looked at the camera. My dad creamed himself. Like, it was
awkward, I imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely awkward. But, like, it's the fact that something like this was able to take off with, like, minimal exposure, it went viral after it was, you know, just kind of thrown into a presentation or something.
And it's the perfect recipe for it, too. Like, part of that had to be part of either Hideo Kojima or Guillermo del Toro's brainchild, because I don't think Konami would have been clever enough to be like, let's give this a weird name, just put it out there, and let people play it, and if they get to the end of it, then... And that's the thing, I didn't even know you could die. Like, you were the one that told me you could die in that demo, because I haven't even played it.
You do and you don't, though, because, like, when you come back, you still have your flashlight, and... Yeah, you don't start over. You just, I don't know.
It's like back to a checkpoint?
No, I don't know. I don't know. It just sounds like, and by the way, through my speaker system, it sounds like your organs ripped out, man.
Oh God, I know your speaker system too. Yeah, that's got to be terrible.
Yeah, it's
and amazing.
It's horrifying, but dude, we need more stuff like this, but I don't know. I'm kind of fearing the future of what could be Japanese gaming. I'm hoping, you know, especially when it comes to horror. I'm glad that Fatal Frame is coming.
Yeah.
But like,
well, horror. I mean, another thing about horror though is horror is starting to see. I don't even know if you could call it a resurgence, because I don't think we ever had horror games like we do now. Like you have Outlast, like you have Amnesia, like you have Alien Isolation. Like, I feel like now we've reached an era where people are like, screw any sense of action as a possibility. We're going to make these games hard because that's what makes them terrifying. And they're going to be about protagonists that are they're not empowered. You don't have tools at your disposal. You don't have all these abilities to fight back. You have very little, and your only option is to hopefully distract the guy and run away. Like, you have, and even Slender and Slender the Arrival, I mean, they might not be, I mean, I've watched a gameplay video of Slender, and it's a pretty good distraction is what I'll call it. But I'm not going to play that game. I watched someone play it, and it actually kind of freaked me out, which is amazing because the Slender Man looks absolutely terrible in the original one. But you have, like, all of a sudden people are making these horror games, and a lot of them are actually indie. I feel actually that it's kind of appropriate that a lot of horror games are indie, and then Alien Isolation is the one big AAA budget one, because when you go back to the history of horror films and stuff, Alien would be the one expensive horror movie to make. And most slasher films, I mean, that's why they're able to make so many horror movies, is they're usually lower budget, but especially if you release it around October, you get a lot of people coming to buy tickets and seeing it. And so they're able, it's like horror movies are in this weird realm similar to romantic comedies. But romantic comedies, it's a lot easier to understand, okay, it's a cheap film to make, but it'll still get a lot of people to go there and watch it, no matter how crappy it is. It'll be able to be a profitable, usually.
Yeah, just cast Adam Sandler in it. It'll do fine.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus.
But then, like, horror video games, it used to be not the case, but now we have, like, indie developers are able to really do it. And all of a sudden, horror is, like, the realm of the indie, and you're able to make a game on the cheap and then recoup your investment. And I'm wondering if... Actually, that's the biggest thing that I'm wondering is right now it does seem like a lot of smaller develop... Like, a lot, like we have such an indie explosion in America. Do we really have much of one in Japan? I mean, every once in a while, the 3DS gets a small game. Like, they had the Crimson something. There's the... I can't remember, 3DS game begins with Crimson, but...
Is that the AR game with, like, the book or something?
No, that was Spirit Camera. That was a sort of spiritual successor to Fatal Frame, and that had a lot of technical issues. Like, that could have been an interesting game, except it had way too many... I tried playing that at PAX East, and the conditions had to be way too perfect for that game to work.
Ah.
That was the downside to that game, and from what I've discussed with people that did buy the full version, that's essentially how it is. You need perfect, and they don't work for horror a lot of times too.
That's a shame.
So, but Fatal Frame should not have that issue. But even then, like, there was a Crimson. I wish I could remember the name of it. It's a 3DS eShop game where you basically play a dungeon-crawling party, and you simulate throwing actual dice, and the characters all look like miniatures, and goddamn if playing this game doesn't make me want to play D&D or something fierce. But that was a lower-budget game. They had the Starship Starship Dampery game that was very interesting. The Attack of the Friday Monsters. Like, they had a bunch of these smaller games on the eShop, but, like, those are all by Level 5, which is not necessarily a small studio. They're not huge, but they're definitely mid-tier at least. But I'm wondering, like, if you do have an indie, any kind of an indie scene in Japan at all, or if it's largely absent, if they're mostly just going, or if they're just mostly going for, like, iPhone games or something, mobile games, versus trying to go for Wii U and 3DS eShop. Because if you go to the eShop for either one of these, most of the games are coming out of American indie developers or European indie developers or Canadian indie developers, you know, just the West, basically.
Now, that, I think what might have caused this, you know, I feel like it all started with Slender, but I really, well, at least like the Surge started with Slender, but I really think the Let's Play community really had a big hand in that. Is there a Let's Play community in Japan?
Probably not, because and a lot of people
it doesn't seem like
this.
It.
A lot of people discuss this about Nintendo specifically, but I think the issue there is again, it's one of those things where it's gotta be more familiar with the. Got to be more familiar with the culture, because I think a lot of Japanese like, we have our jokes about, you know, old white businessmen. I have a feeling old Japanese businessmen are worse than anything we can imagine, because
it's extremely, they're extremely rooted in tradition.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, you hear about a new Japanese band, you can't even find a full music video. they have promotional videos that are maybe a minute or two of the song, and that's it. I, like, if you look at my Ramble Pack videos, some of them have advertisements because, like, Devil May Cry, that will have an advertisement on the video because I use a song by, well, technically a Black Sabbath song, but it's covered by a band named Tear. That got copyright claim, and you know what? I acknowledged it because it's not my song, but all they did was put an ad on it. They're like, okay, we're going to make money off of every time someone views your video because they're using our song. I'm okay with that because I'm not trying to make money off of my channel. But I had to upload a new version of the Remember Me video because I was using a song by a Japanese band, and they outright blocked it. They made it like, from then on, like, basically my, there was no sound on my video at all, which I can't have a 40-minute analysis video without music. So, I mean, that kind of frustrated me because it's like, look, if you just put an ad on there, I'd acknowledge it and you'd be getting money, but instead you're getting nothing. You're getting nothing. And that's the thing. Like, imagine how much easier it would be to sell Japanese music in other countries. I mean, freaking Gangnam Style got big in America. Now, it was only because it was goofy. Imagine music that actually sounded good, you know, getting big in America. But the Japanese, they just, they're even worse.
It's not the way that they traditionally know things to work. And yeah, a lot of, I mean, you can look at Nintendo, frankly, as a prime example in the gaming space. You know, how many times has Nintendo gotten dumped on for, you know, not getting online, or because Nintendo is one of the only major gaming companies now that's copyright striking anyone who uses their footage on YouTube?
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these various things where all of these other companies, which are by no means move at light speed, but all these other trends that other big companies in the gaming space have adapted to and kind of decided to work with, whereas Nintendo and actually Konami's another big company that goes after YouTubers. I've actually had claims filed against a couple of different videos I've done with Konami content in them. Namco does it too. All these companies that are often Japanese that just look at YouTube and they don't understand it, so they're like, well, this must die. As opposed to going, all right, doing what the North American publishers did, which I don't think a lot of the big North American publishers like YouTube or what it's doing, but they've also realized this is something we can either work with or get killed by, so let's work with it.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Some of them will give press copies of games to YouTubers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know PewDiePie is getting free games.
Oh yeah. Any gaming YouTube channel of notable size gets the same access a big traditional gaming press website does now. Tons of them do.
And here's the question, like, as much as I already rag on the gaming press for their lack of journalistic integrity or professionalism, what do I think of these YouTubers getting that kind of access?
A lot of whom never aimed to be professionals to begin with, right? They're just people making
videos, just having a little fun.
Yeah, a lot of them are. Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's actually where my concern comes in. But that's just an old man ranting on a soapbox.
But at the same time, it shows things, right? Like the companies, like the Ubisofts and the EAs and everybody else, have realized that it can actually be to their benefit to work with these companies, because the people who are going to watch a Let's Play of a game and never buy it probably weren't going to buy it anyway. But a lot of people who watch YouTube content on games, like me, for example, I bought a lot of games because of video content specifically that I've seen on them, and they've realized that, yeah, if we work with these guys, it can probably only help us and it probably won't hurt us very much. Whereas a lot of the larger Japanese publishers, and not all of them, some of them, like Capcom, actually works with YouTubers quite a bit. But some of these other companies have look at YouTube and they don't understand it, and they just see it as that this sort of people at the top look at this stuff and go, well, these people are making money off our content, they can't do that. And they don't go any further than that. They don't listen to the people going, well, actually, if we work with these guys, maybe it'll benefit us. They're like, no, they're stealing from us. And yeah, that's what companies like Nintendo and Konami are doing. And I think that type of very rigid traditional thinking that takes 10 times as long as anyone else to progress and move forward is hurting them severely, because they just don't they don't want that they're operating in a very tunnel vision fashion, and they just don't want to accept the realities of how this stuff is working. Because I mean, at one point I was listening to, I think it was Jeff Gerstmann actually on Giant Bomb, was talking about how years ago when online was just starting to eclipse print media for the gaming press, how a lot of Japanese companies, funny enough Square being one of them at the time, would not give review copies to online websites because they literally thought that, like, they had so little understanding of what the online games press was, they thought it was like the equivalent of like giving a review copy to like a torrent site or something. Like they literally had no understanding of what online games coverage was. And they said, he, I remember him saying it took years for them to finally start getting taken seriously. And I think they're going through the same thing now with YouTube, which many people are considering sort of the next phase of gaming media.
And that's another thing too. I mean, you don't have nearly as many bloggers in Japan as you do in the States. Like, no. In the States, everyone and their mom has a blog.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Versus over in Japan, like, not that many people blog.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a thing there that is seen as interesting by a lot of young people.
So you have, and that's the thing, like, now you're basically telling not only these old curmudgeons to, and in some ways, I mean, it is kind of their job. I mean, like, again, like, to me, the old curmudgeons that completely blocked that video I put up rather than just force me to put an ad up that they got the money for, like, to me, that's like, okay, guys, come on, get with the times. But at the same time, like, a lot of these companies, and that's also a company that's not used to being global. Video games at least have the advantage that they will be able to adapt, because unless they decide to shrink down and just be catering to Japan, then they have to go global. And I think Squaresoft is, and that's where it comes down, is Nintendo is adapting at their own rate, but they've always played conservatively.
Yes.
So, and it's a dang shame, because there are some things that people bring up that it's like, Nintendo's going to try and minimize their company's risk. And that's absolutely actually one of the things they're doing it, especially now, because the 3DS and the Wii U did not sell as much as projected. So, like, people are complaining about the Amiibo shortage, and they're talking like it's probably, you know, a false shortage. Like, it's just, you know, they're a manufactured shortage kind of a thing. And I think maybe, but part of it's because they don't want to be stuck with all of this product that they can't move.
Yeah, and on top of that, that ties into them not being exactly sure in the beginning whether or not it would take off like it did. I didn't expect it to. I didn't expect people to, you know, like, buy into the Amiibo hype like they did. And
I think the shortage is actually helping that, because, like, to me, it's like, if I'm coming by, like, the Best Buy, or I'm going by the GameStop, it's like, you know what, I'm going to go pick myself up one. But there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to get myself a Lucina Amiibo at this rate, because they're already sold out of pre-orders.
Oh, hell yeah, they're gone, dude. Like
that. Yeah. And it's a damn shame. But that's the thing, like, what do I want them for? I just want them there because I want them to be there and look pretty.
And they that's do look pretty really for the most part. Also, yeah. And I swear to God, they better have plenty of those Wooly Yoshi amiibos in stock. I swear to God.
They're only coming in Japan.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. Had them, that's what had I read yesterday, and I was really pissed about it because that's the only amiibo I'm interested in. It
Where?
Was, I think, I, oh, what site was it?
Because it was on the American Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, dude,
Japan
white guy
only
was announcing that. They can't do that.
Believe me, I hope I'm wrong, but what I, okay, I read
wrong.
That. I think it was just on, I think it was from somebody on Twitter, so take that with a mountain of salt, you should. But
not even a mountain, a planet.
No.
That is the Majora's Mask moon made out of salt.
No, okay. Honestly, that's the only amiibo I am interested in. The amiibo thing, I've looked at it and been like, no, not for me. But that Yoshi one, like, I will cut people to get one of those. Like, I freaking
honestly
want that thing.
It is a really good creative.
Oh, it looks incredible! Yeah,
to do them, it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah,
and it can be a cat toy if I wanted it to be.
True.
An expensive cat toy,
but you know what? It's a Nintendo product, which means it's not going to break.
Nope.
Well, if you give it to your cat, there's a possibility.
Maybe. It'll probably break the cat first, knowing if it's a Nintendo product.
It'll pound the crap out of her, turn her into an egg.
Yeah.
All right. We've been going a little long in the tooth, but what I did want to say was Nintendo's doing their own thing just conservatively, but honestly, even if this generation didn't do... Even if this was their GameCube equivalent generation, or even Nintendo 64. I mean, they had... The N64 didn't sell that greatly. The GameCube didn't sell that... Well, the GameCube...
The GameCube did okay. It didn't do what they wanted, but it did okay.
But but that's the thing. Like, everyone's like... All of a sudden, the Wii was a huge explosion, and now people are like, oh man, I don't know if Nintendo will survive this. They've survived worse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, they have.
They're going to be good for a while. Yeah. And they got the 3DS to back them up. The 3DS is still doing really well. And the new 3DS... Like, it's also
it's sold out!
Apparently, they're hard to find, which surprised me, but that's cool.
That's probably, again, though, that's probably they didn't know how many they'd sell, so they went with a safe number, and now they're sold out.
And now they're oh, crap.
I was going to get one, but then they're like, yeah, we're going to announce a new console, and I'm like, I'm going to see what it is, because if it's another portable, I'm just going to wait on buying a new 3DS until... whatever that is comes out, which probably won't be for like another 2 to 3 years.
They said they won't even talk about it for another year. So
it's probably at the very least, I don't think we'd see it until 2017.
Oh yeah.
But it does sound like they're trying to make a much more unified platform, which
I think that's a great
for
idea.
Everyone,
I think
for
that'd everyone be fan-friggin-tastic.
Well, the thing is, even though I have no idea how they'll do it, for everyone that's talking about how Nintendo's behind the times, they're technically trying to do the same kind of thing Microsoft keeps trying to do over and over and over again.
Yeah.
If they really are trying to make one unified platform.
Yeah.
And I think for them, that would be a really good idea, but I need to know how they're going to do it first. But all I know is it's going to be different than anything I'd predict, because even though I can... Well, I wasn't as surprised with the Wii U. Because the Wii U is basically taking the DS and just separating the second screen from the first. But whatever they decide to do, it'll be different. But I might get myself a new 3DS. I just need the right bundle for it. But even then, like regardless, Nintendo, I think they're set for the future. And Square Enix, like, I think they're figuring out what to do. Like, they had to switch around who was in charge of things. Because, like, Final Fantasy XV is looking great. Their whole Fabula Nova Chrysalis whatever kind of failed, but I think they're getting an idea. It's like, okay, Bravely Default actually sold, so we're going to make another one.
Well, and I remember them actually coming out and saying that Bravely Default, like, that they learned a huge lesson from that, because they put that out thinking it wasn't going to do nearly as well as it did, because it was much more simplified and traditional than a lot of their newer RPGs, and then it did really well. And I remember... they actually went back and went, yeah, that's got us rethinking some things.
Good. We don't
Which is great. Need another no, that's awesome.
We don't need another Final Hallway 13. All right? Nor do we need any sequels coming up, like, directly tied to Final Hallway 13.
Yeah.
God.
I think they're done with that.
But I'm waiting because Final Fantasy 15 could be Final Highway 15. I'm waiting.
Maybe.
I don't care. The combat is awesome.
It looked interesting. Like, I haven't cared about Final Fantasy in a great many years, and I watched a video of that demo, and I was like,
it's not Final Fantasy. I mean, the first thing you got to really keep in mind is that it's, or at least it's not the old, like,
it's not Final Fantasy as you think different. Of it. Yeah.
Final Fantasy is different. The old final turn-based Final Fantasy is long dead.
Yeah.
And I am okay with that.
Yeah, I am too, actually.
Because I'm older now. I'm never going to get that experience again.
Yeah. No, I looked at that demo and I was like, huh, this might be one I pay attention to, which I haven't in many years, so that says something.
Dude, yeah. I played that demo for like 4 hours a couple weeks ago. I was so hooked to it, and when I was done, it was exactly what I was afraid of, which I finished it and I was like, I don't want to play anything else right now. Well, actually, I was afraid I wouldn't want to play Final Fantasy Type-0. I was sitting there like, I don't want to play anything else I have right now. I want more Final Fantasy 15. I am so depressed because that game's not going to be out for a long time.
Yeah, it's a ways out, I think.
So I was stunned by how much I enjoyed that demo. And if that kind of quality is what I could expect from Squaresoft on one of their big budget Japanese titles, and they're going to make another Final Fantasy Type Zero, I believe. But they're definitely they're doing what a lot of bigger studios are doing, which is they're reducing the number of projects they're taking on, whereas before they would have had some big game coming out every year, maybe multiple times a year. But at the same time, they also do have their Eidos division, which is basically their Western division, and I think that's the best thing for them, is they absorbed a Western studio, and they're they put out Murdered Soul Suspect, which was not under Eidos. They're putting out Life is Strange, which I'm so glad after a game like Murdered Soul Suspect, they're willing to keep taking those risks, and I think Life is Strange is getting a lot of people are thinking it's better than a Telltale game.
Like, it's an adventure game. I've live streamed the first two episodes of that, and it's something special. I'll put it that way.
I played the first episode. I've got to play the second one.
Yeah.
Been a little busy.
It's really cool and very different, and not something you would ever expect to see the Square Enix name on, which I think is the most telling part.
But then again, I would not have expected to see their name on Tomb Raider.
No.
That's the thing.
Which they screwed up with that, by the way. I'm still mad.
What?
I am suspicious now.
The new one?
I love the new one.
I really like the new one.
No, the new one's great, all right? But then they make the definitive edition on both the Xbox One and PS4, and then the sequel to Tomb Raider is Xbox exclusive. It's on the 360 and the Xbox One. Why?
That I still find very strange.
That
probably because of paid for exclusivity, which is expensive.
Well, they did.
That's exactly what happened.
One of the reasons you got a PS4 was for Street Fighter V. Am I right?
Absolutely.
That's true. And Sony paid for that.
That one they have not discussed. They have not. Granted,
it's also on
Super
PC,
Street Fighter V. That's true.
It is true. And apparently, I believe it was confirmed as well that the Xbox exclusivity for Tomb Raider is timed. It's timed for a while. It's like a year, but it will come to other things.
So basically, holiday 2016, I'll be getting Rise of the Tomb Raider Uber DLC edition with all the different costumes of Lara Croft.
Yeah, that's probably exactly.
Probably for $40 too, which is all right, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm cool with that. I'll wait a year, except holy crap, I just realized that's going to be the year with Final Fantasy XV and the new Legend of Zelda, so...
Enjoy.
I'm going to be busy in 2016.
Yeah.
So, but still, I like the idea of having something to look forward to. New Fire Emblem next year. But, I mean, again, though, trying to wrap things up.
There's too much to talk about, bro.
There is too much to talk about. But yeah, Square Enix, they're doing a good job, but I think right now they're probably poised to be the biggest non-first party, they're the biggest publisher without a console, I'd say, from Japan. Because I really can't think of any company from Japan
that's a publisher that is as big. They're putting out the most stuff for sure, and I think they probably are. Are
the most successful.
They're not the biggest company by size, but in terms of thinking just games only, then yeah, they probably are the biggest player right now.
And considering where they're what they're putting out, where they're poised, they could honestly become one of the best third party because think about everyone's complaining about Ubisoft, Activision, and EA in some way constantly churning out the same old, same old. And while people are still buying Assassin's Creed games, people are still buying Call of Duty, they're still... those companies are all struggling to put stuff out. Square Enix, meanwhile, I mean, who knows? Maybe Thief is now dead in the water. Maybe Thief is gone.
Nope.
Who knows? I mean, or maybe they'll try again.
Yeah.
Deus Ex, I think we'll be seeing a new one of that.
Oh, yeah. I think they already confirmed that.
There you go.
Yeah, that's going to come for sure. And they're doing all these smaller downloadable experiments in that as well, which seem to be doing okay for them. They're doing different stuff, and that not all of it is necessarily humongous. You know, stuff like Life is Strange is a smaller downloadable series. They're trying smaller experiments. Not everything has to be, a triple A title for them to take a shot at it.
And so, I mean, I think Square Enix, I mean, they're going to be okay. They're going to stick around for a while. And I think, basically my biggest concern is whatever's going on with Japan, what will happen with Japan's economy, because there's a lot going on well beyond the games industry over there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even the music industry is catering to otaku over there. I mean, that's how bad it is over there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing that a lot of people don't talk about when you hear discussions about the Japanese gaming industry, is that, yeah, Japan's economy has actually been in a pretty bad way for a lot of years now, I think.
Oh, yeah, they're just talking about how Japan's sexist and everything.
Dude, it's actually scary accurate. It's actually scary how accurate of a portrayal of Japan Akiba's trip, like, has in, like, outside of, you know, the whole ripping vampires' clothes off so they burn up in the sun.
Is that what you're doing?
That's what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
After, you know, beating the crap out of them with, like, a keyboard or something like that. Like, dude, everything there is just otaku catered. And everywhere you go, everywhere in that place, it's crazy. It's, I guess you could say that's Little Japan, and you're kind of experiencing it in the form of a game. It's, when you think about it, it's just really, really freaking terrifying.
But that's the thing, dude. After like television shows like Densha Otoko came out, The Train Man, and Akihabara Deep, and like all this other entertainment that's focused on Akihabara and just otaku in general, like Akihabara's kind of been a place where otaku don't want to be, because there are people that go there to look at the otaku to be like, oh my god, this is where they go. It is, I mean, that's the thing. This is a country that is in trouble. Weird shit's going on, and people keep looking at it through a very Western culture lens, and me, I'm just like, I'll be happy if 10 years from now, any of these companies still exist.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like Nintendo and Square Enix right now have the best possibility of jumping shores if they need to.
Yeah.
They have a good establishment in the West. What that could mean for some of the games, I don't know, because
Mario with a gun.
We are looking at a very real possibility that Japan as a culture could cease to exist.
It's a possibility, dude. And
yeah.
I mean,
barely reform in a way that nobody understands yet.
So no one knows what's going on with that country's future. So I do look up with a bit of fear at like the future of a company like Capcom and then Konami. I'm afraid Konami is, you know what, more than Capcom, I'm afraid Konami is going to end up going away, or at least from
the games industry,
because the Metal Gear Solid 5 isn't even out yet. Kojima's gone, and they've already got job postings for new Metal Gear Solid games.
Ugh.
Yeah,
it's not going to be the same without him, man.
No. I don't think they ever understand. It is, you know what? For anyone that ever played or was interested in a Metal Gear Solid game, or just maybe didn't like Metal Gear Solid 2, look up Matthew Matosis on YouTube and look up his Metal Gear Solid 2 video, because he does a really great breakdown about how that game is what Hideo Kojima thinks about sequels, and kind of a, I don't even know what to call it. Like, not a satire, not a mockery. It's a view of games as just being the same thing as the first. And yeah, considering that game's story and what happens in it, it makes a lot of sense. And it really gives me so much respect for Hideo Kojima as a auteur. I mean, people, especially in the West, people don't like the idea of auteurs in games or something, or like, because I've read so many articles by development teams that look at it as a team effort. You don't want to just have one person's name attached. But when I look at a game like Metal Gear Solid 2, Hideo Kojima is an auteur and shows what the gaming equivalent of a film director could be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and not in the sense of Heavy Rain, all right?
Not in the sense of Heavy Rain and those emotions.
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 Oh, that's what you call the QuickTime events.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, that's where, for me, like, a lot of people will just be like, oh, Japanese games aren't my thing. But to me, it's like, you're missing out on a culture that long ago got over the idea of video games being just a kid's thing or just this. I mean, granted, now they're kind of an otaku thing, so there is still some stigma, but...
Guilty.
There, yeah.
I'm raising my hand, dude.
Yeah. But, for me, it would be... No matter how many screw-ups they make, I feel like Japanese developers long ago accepted video games as an art... While we are still, I mean, not as much anymore, but at one point when we were all sitting there, like, what is the Citizen Kane of video games?
Oh, they were Jesus just, Christ.
They were making their art.
Yeah.
They were making their art. They were fine with it. It just, anyways, yeah, look up that video by Matthew Matosas, and
I'm going to do it right after this podcast. I'm like, not even joking.
Yeah, I've watched some of his stuff before. He does some pretty crazy in-depth analysis of stuff, so I bet that's good.
Anyway, so yes, to wrap it up, I think Square Enix and Nintendo are in a good position. I'm really hoping Capcom figures their shit out. At the very least, I'm hoping I get a chance to play Dragon's Dogma Online because holy crap, Dragon's Dogma, I love it.
And have it come to consoles too, please, not just PC.
And I'm hoping, you know what? I want Nintendo to fund and have a hand in a new Mega Man title. I mean, I know we got Mighty No. 9 coming out, and Mighty No. 9 looks great. And you know what? Kaiji Inafune. I don't know, man. I feel like with Kaiji Inafune at Capcom, there must have been a point where it was like the Titanic, and he's the guy on watch, and he sees the iceberg coming ahead, but instead of shouting about it, he's like,
nope, see I'm taking this lifeboat, and I'm out.
Yep. Just, I'm gone.
It's possible. That is entirely possible. And
because he was quoted as saying, you know, the games industry is behind in Japan and everything like that. I don't, and that's the thing where I mixed feelings about that, obviously, considering what I was just saying about Hideo Kojima being an auteur. But man, Mighty No. 9 or not, I want Nintendo to make a Mega Man game,
or at least
that would be pretty badass.
Or in a perfect world, WayForward makes a Mega Man game. I would be perfectly happy with that.
I could see that too. WayForward, something like that. Like what Ryan on the Magic Hour podcast said. Like Nintendo buys Mega Man, or something like, or WayForward makes Mega Man games. Like that would be amazing. But otherwise, I mean,
just give us something.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens in the future.
Yeah.
But right now, Japanese gaming, just like its culture, is kind of in a really bad flux in a really big spot. And I can only hope for the best. So,
yeah.
You guys got any final thoughts?
Well, in my case, I think we covered a lot of it. But it's going to be interesting to see where the game industry in Japan goes. I mean, I haven't played as many Japanese titles in recent years, but there's a few that have interested me, and yeah, I still, you know, I grew up with the stuff a lot of these companies put out, so I still follow this stuff, and I'm very curious where it goes. But it's one of those things where you just got to kind of wait and see what they do.
And Joey,
I don't know. Like as a gamer right now, I'm just kind of coasting and keeping an eye on things that are keeping me interested, but. I am also incredibly worried for Capcom, and all I know, and Square Enix, they better keep riding their high because they're doing a damn good job. Other than, you know, the timed exclusive for Tomb Raider, I'll get over that eventually. Probably by, like, maybe I'll buy the sequel to Tomb Raider on the 360 just because I'm a sucker. So,
I'm sure I'll have plenty to play. I'll be too busy playing Splatoon.
I can't wait for that game. That game's
looking amazing. Yeah, me too.
So,
all right. In that case, everyone, you can find more of Jerry at youtube.com/. Oh yeah, you're weird. Just YouTube search for Retro Flashback because that's easier.
That'll work. Yeah, or just go to geekbravado.com, which links off to all my stuff from there.
All right, and how can people find you, Joey?
You can find me on Twitter at heirapparent310. That is heirapparent, the number 310. You don't need to spell 310, goddammit.
Just be warned, most of what he will be tweeting about is wrestling.
Wrestling!
Wrestling!
It's the only place I can be Hispanic. It's only every Monday, though, all right? I'm a huge freaking mark on Monday. Oh, and by the way, because you can vote for... All right, one final thing. You can vote for your favorite, for your, like, you know, the Smash Brothers character that you want to see. Everybody needs to vote for John Cena.
That'd be something else. Jeez.
Everybody needs to vote for John Cena, okay?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest. After watching some of the NXT stuff, I'd rather vote for Bayley because she already has an anime caricature.
Yeah, that's true. Still, come on, John Cena.
No, all seriousness. Meanwhile, me, it's going to be rough. I'm not going to be putting out a lot of content in the near future. I'm trying to, but you can find me on gamertag.net, or you can find me on youtube.com/user/ramblepack64. And honestly, though, right now you're probably not going to find a lot of content because I'm really working on getting my next Ramble Pack video out. It's going to be Metroid Other M. I've gotten 3 out of 4 games recorded, so hopefully I've got myself a deadline. I'm going to try and get it out by May, but I will not allow myself to get Splatoon until I have this video out.
There you go.
All right.
Which I'm hoping by May it'll be done, but I have no idea how long it's going to be. I just know I played 3 out of 4 Metroid games I need to with all the footage. I just got to get one more. So hopefully that'll be soon. As usual, subscribe to us on iTunes or go to www.gamertag.net. You can get the RSS feed from any of the podcast episode postings, or you can direct... Well, I mean, I'm assuming you're... Somehow you're listening to this episode, so somehow you've got access to it. But review us on iTunes or facebook.com/ramblepack64. Comment, you know... like the page and then everything, because that's how you get me. I'm on Google Plus as RamblePack64. So all of these different ways you can follow me. So, all right, everyone, thank you very much for listening, though. And again, if you have any thoughts or opinions on Japanese games, again, comment on Facebook or on www.gamertag.net. I have comments there through Facebook. I should get a new system than just Facebook.
And dude, thanks for actually like having me on for the first time. This was a fun little discussion.
Yeah, it was
this
cool.
This isn't the first time. You've been part of the Norwood Film Club.
Well, I mean via Skype.
Thank you for listening then, and thank you guys for joining me.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Adios.